A Refutation of the Doctrine of Total Hereditary Depravity by Eilat Raines, 1833. A Definition. Depravity means moral corruption. Total signifies wholly, complete. Hereditary signifies descending by inheritance. The definition, then, of the phrase total hereditary depravity as used in the following pages is as follows. Total moral corruption descending from Adam through all parents to their offspring, so that all Adam's posterity have been wholly corrupted by his first sin. We design to present to the public a thorough refutation of this doctrine. Remarks on the origin of the doctrine of total hereditary depravity. This doctrine most probably originated with the Oriental philosophers. This philosophy is said to have originated in Chaldea or Persia, whence it passed through Syria, Asia Minor, and Egypt, and mixing with other systems formed many different sects. The Oriental philosophers, though divided into a great number of sects, seem to have been generally agreed in believing matter to be the cause of all evil. And as the human body is composed of matter, it was supposed to be corrupt and vitiated, the source of every depraved passion and appetite. When, therefore, these philosophers or their disciples were converted to Christianity, they brought into the church with them many of their peculiarities. And hence, in the very infancy of Christianity, we find the Gnostics propagating the doctrine of the depravity of matter. This led them to deny the humanity of Jesus Christ, or that Jesus had come in the flesh. The Apostle John alludes to this doctrine of the Gnostics when he speaks of the many deceivers that had gone out into the world, and when he declares to his brethren that every one that denied that Jesus had come in the flesh was a deceiver and an antichrist. The Gnostics taught that Jesus seemed to have flesh, but that he had none, that he seemed to have his blood shed, but that he had no blood. They were, in short, incorrigible spiritualizers. They looked upon all other Christians, says Mr. Buck, quote, as simple, ignorant, and barbarous persons who explained the Scriptures in a low, literal, and unedifying signification. Unquote. Thus, having spiritualized, or rather Gnosticized, the Scriptures, they proceeded to spiritualize the flesh and blood of Jesus Christ. Here, then, was laid by these Gnostics the broad foundation for all the subsequent corruptions of Christianity. Their philosophical refinement, as no doubt they vainly imagined it to be, was too great to admit of their submitting themselves to the rational doctrine of Jesus and his apostles. This doctrine must therefore be mysticized until made to accord with their vain imaginings, and finally with the dreams of every subsequent visionary. In a short time, as a consequence of the doctrine of the total depravity of matter and the necessity of spiritualizing the Scriptures, innumerable metaphysical vagaries were superinduced. Free will, free grace, original sin, etc. became the topics of angry controversy. And this controversy, says Mosheim, was the commencement of those unhappy contests, those subtle and perplexing disputes concerning grace or the nature and operation of that divine power which is spiritually required in order to salvation, that rent the church into the most deplorable divisions through the whole course of the succeeding age, and which to the deep regret of every true and generous Christian has been continued down to the present time. Mosheim, Volume 1, page 336. The eons or emanations of the Gnostics seem very nearly the prototypes of modern revelations and mystical spiritual operations. Irenaeus accuses them, quote, of introducing into religion certain vain and ridiculous genealogies, that is, a kind of divine processions or emanations which had foundation in their own wild imagination. The Gnostics confessed that these eons or emanations were nowhere expressly delivered in the sacred writings, but insisted that Christ had intimated them in parables to such as could understand them. Unquote. This, according to Buck's Theological Dictionary, article Gnostics. These eons or emanations were, in the estimation of the Gnostics, the infallible illuminators, The book was consequently a matter of inferior consideration. Indeed, it may be fairly inferred that the Gnostics taught that the book was a dead letter to all who were not the subjects of illumination from their eons. These eons, said they, are intimated by Christ in his parables to such as can understand them. They then, we conclude from this sentence, taught that those who were not the subjects of abstract illuminations could not understand Christ's parables. We must, however, say of the Gnostics that they were in one point more consistent than are the modern advocates of total hereditary depravity. These acute philosophers perceive that as they held the doctrine of the total depravity of all matter, and by consequence the total depravity of human nature in so far as it is composed of matter, they must also hold the humanity of Jesus Christ to be totally depraved if they admitted his humanity. They therefore denied that Jesus Christ had come in the flesh. But modern advocates of total depravity, apparently less acute than the Gnostics, advocate the total depravity of human nature, and yet teach that Christ came in this nature, flesh of our flesh and bone of our bone. But if Christ came in our nature, and it is indeed totally depraved, then he must have come in a totally depraved nature, and must consequently, in so far as he was human, have been himself totally depraved. Some persons in modern times, seeing this difficulty, have argued that Christ took human nature such as it was before the fall, and that consequently the human nature of Christ was pure. But this is a gratuitous assumption. If Jesus took human nature such as it was before the fall, he must, it seems to us, have taken it before the fall. This, however, was not the case. He was made, not of Adam nor of Eve before the fall, but of a woman nearly 4,000 years after it. He was made of a woman, Mary, and was the seed of David. Therefore, if Mary and all the seed of David were by nature wholly corrupt, the humanity of Jesus must have been wholly corrupt likewise. It is said that for as much as the children were partakers of flesh and blood, Christ also himself took part of the same. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14. But if our whole nature is wholly corrupt, there was no part of it which was not wholly corrupt which he could take. It is said also that he took not on him the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 16. We admit that if human nature had been only partially defiled by the first sin of Adam, Christ might have taken human nature without this defilement, and we think that this was probably the fact. But if the nature of man is nothing but a mass of sin or corruption, then we say that Christ could not have taken our nature, nor any part of it, without at the same time taking at least a part of our corruption.